Mr. Hughes.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Patrick Hughes, and I represent Ocean Atlantic Development Corporation. Your Honors, Willow Tree Farm, Cambridge Homes, Elda Arnold, and Byzantio LLC plotted against my client to ensure that they would not be able to exercise easement rights that they paid $150,000 to secure. And the reason that they did that was because if my client was successful in building a storm drain across the easement parcel and thereby perfecting their easement perpetually, Willow Tree would have been unable to resell that very same easement to Cambridge for an additional $200,000. Cambridge Homes would have been deprived of a necessary component of their development, and that has been specifically set forth in the record that Cambridge repeatedly indicated that without that particular easement, they could not acquire and then develop the neighboring property that was owned by Elda Arnold and Byzantio. Without the easement, Cambridge was not going to purchase for $11 million the Byzantio and Arnold farms. So it was a necessary component of their plan to prohibit Ocean Atlantic from perfecting that easement.
Why didn't your client ever secure that $50,000 bond?
Well, two points, Your Honor. Number one, there was no obligation to secure the $50,000 bond. The second point is, ultimately, we did secure the bond to establish before this court and before the lower court that we could. But to the first point, the bond is not a requirement of the contract. It's not an obligation, and this is one of the points that the lower court got incorrect. The lower court held that the bond was a material obligation of the contract that had to be performed either regardless or at a time at the inception of the contract, long before it was actually due. In fact, the bond was a condition precedent of Willow Tree's obligation to perform. It was a condition precedent of Willow Tree having to allow my client access to the parcel. The reason
I don't understand that.
We had certain obligations under the agreement. One of those obligations was to pay $100,000 for the easement. Another obligation was to pay $50,000 for the extension. Those were the two material obligations that we had. We also had certain conditions.
You said something that Willow Tree had the obligation to.
That's correct.
How does that?
Willow Tree has an obligation, Your Honor, to allow us access to the parcel to complete construction of the storm drain. Giving Willow Tree the bond was a condition precedent to that obligation. Ocean Atlantic was obligated, in the context of a condition precedent, to provide the bond. That would then trigger Willow Tree's obligation to give us access to the property to construct. The reason that the bond was not provided to Willow Tree is because the time for the bond to be provided never became due. And that's established in the record repeatedly. What Judge Lefkoe held at the lower court was that the bond was either required regardless or it was required at the inception of the contract in 1998.
Well, what language in this easement agreement tells us when the obligation to secure the bond arises?
That's a very good question. The language
you.
Of the easement.
That's probably the only good question.
not everybody says that to him.
I'll resist the urge to congratulate
Judge Evans. Day.
I'll resist the urge to congratulate Judge Evans.
Let me walk back to Milwaukee.
The language of the contract does not specifically delineate the time of when the bond is due. What Judge Lefkoe held was that it was due in conjunction with tests and studies pursuant to paragraph 4 of the agreement. Under the agreement, when we reached the agreement in 1998, there was a 90-day period in which for Ocean Atlantic to conduct tests and studies. Judge Lefkoe held that the bond would have been due, according to the plain language of the agreement, at that time. The problem with that analysis is that isn't ever when the bond was due. We accessed the property repeatedly to perform tests and studies. The reason we needed to do the tests and studies was to prepare these development plans that we submitted to Willow Tree for their review and approval. We were successful in accessing the property without a bond, completing the plans without a bond, giving those plans to WillowTree for their review.
Mr. Hughes?
Well, yes, sir.
What about that language in paragraph 9 about requiring the bond to be furnished before any activity takes place? How should we read that?
Well, even if Your Honor read that literally to mean that activity would constitute the tests and studies of the prior portion of the agreement, it would be of no moment here, because that provision was either modified by the conduct of the parties, and this is just what I was explaining. We were repeatedly given access. We prepared these plans and submitted it to them for their review. They hired an engineer ostensibly to review these plans, although ultimately they never did. And perhaps most importantly, 2 years after the bond would have been due under that scenario, they accepted an extension agreement and an additional $50,000. At that point, the right to claim that the bond was due 2 years prior was no longer something that they were able to do. So even if they had the right to do that at some point, which we don't agree that they did, but even if they did, it was either modified by their conduct and ours or waived permanently by them. And what's important to note is in their papers, in the defendant's papers repeatedly, they constantly claim, correctly so, because the evidence establishes this could be the only time for it, that the bond is to be provided in conjunction with construction. And this makes perfect sense. And the reason it makes sense is it's during construction that the ground would be torn up and have to be repaired. It's during construction that there would be potential physical damage to the WillowTree property. Until the bulldozer hits the ground, there's absolutely no reason or purpose to have that bond in place. And in their papers before this court, they said specifically, and I'll read it to you, there is no dispute that it was imperative to WillowTree Farm that this condition, referring to the bond, had to be satisfied before any construction could begin. And this is the thrust of our argument. When WillowTree failed and refused to review and approve the plans, which was a necessary component to our right to construct. Before they reviewed and then approved the plans, we could not go on the property to construct. When they failed to do that, the issue of construction became moot. Consequently, the issue of the bond, which was designed to abate the risks associated only with construction, also became moot. At that point, whether it is a material obligation or a condition precedent to the contract, WillowTree has breached because they have failed to review complete plans as is their requirement. When they breached, according to the case law that we've cited in the briefs, we don't have any further obligations. It's an issue of when the bond is actually due. Judge Lefkoe misinterpreted when it was actually due. And our position is very clear, and it makes sense both in the record and logically.
But your position conflicts with the specific language of the contract.
You could read it to appear that it would conflict specifically with the language, but it wouldn't make any difference. Because if what you're saying, Your Honor, is that the language of the contract talks about requiring a bond in September of 98 at the inception, that requirement has either been modified by the parties. Because, again, looking at the record, we were allowed access to the property. They allowed an extension of the agreement. This is not something, and it's not something that WillowTree is actually arguing or has ever argued, because they recognize that it's not a good argument. Unfortunately, Judge Lefkoe made a mistake when she read the contract in that frame, literally, without paying enough attention to the notion that that wasn't what the parties were actually agreeing to.
Well, so are you conceding that the contract as written required the bond to be provided before any access to the property, before any test studies or construction, and before having any access to the easement property? That's what the contract says.
I think it's a fair interpretation to read the contract that way. However, I think it's, for purposes of this argument, for purposes of our position, I think the correct analysis is to take the position that even if it says that, it doesn't make any difference with respect to whether or not we failed an obligation under the contract that excused their breach. WillowTree breached the agreement. Judge Lefkoe, in essence, found that herself, because they failed to review and approve complete plans.
Where in the contract does it impose a requirement to approve?
Well,
requires review.
It requires review, and if appropriate, to approve. How this would happen in the real world is, had they ever even bothered to do a review, they may have approved them as written, or they may have decided, look, there are some changes that need to be made, at which point they would have sent those to our engineer, and there would have been some discussion, and ultimately an agreement would have been reached to garner approval, because certainly that approval could not be withheld. And our engineers performed the engineering service such that they would be ready for approval by WillowTree. Had they reviewed the plans, we're confident they would have approved them. Had they not approved the plans, we're confident that they would have made suggestions through their engineers that would have ultimately reached to a conclusion. But we don't get to that. And the reason we don't get to that is because WillowTree never even bothered to review the plans. Because they breached the agreement, the issue of construction never became an issue. And as a result, the bond, which they admit repeatedly, which was only there to ensure the performance of construction, because that's where the risks were, that time never took place. And the logical sequence here, forgetting what may or may not be said in that paragraph, is that at the point in time that we got to in this case, and the parties got to factually, is that we had submitted plans, and we were waiting for their review. The only thing left to do was to do construction. And it was at that point, for the first time, in 6 weeks before we were to complete the construction, right when we wanted to begin, after they had accepted $100,000, after they accepted $50,000, they finally raised the bond issue and said, look, before you come in and construct, you have to provide us with a bond. And we said, and this is in the papers as well, we will provide you a bond at the appropriate time prior to construction, but until you review and approve the plans, thereby triggering the possibility that construction is even going to take place, we have no obligation to provide you with the bond.
At the time that your client provided the plans and specifications, was it physically possible to complete construction on the easement property before the expiration of the agreement?
Yes, Your Honor. Our client provided the plans 8 months prior to the ultimate completion date. And the evidence in the record is clear that we could have completed the easement agreement and constructed the pipe within the easement parcel within a period of about 3 to 4 weeks. So there is no dispute that they had these plans in their possession for 8 months, and they never bothered to do a single review.
Does that time frame include the securing of the necessary government permits?
There are no necessary government permits, Your Honor. That is a red herring that has been set up by the defense. It is, and it was, you know, mostly not paid too close attention to by Judge Lefkoe. Certainly, she didn't base any portion of her ruling on it. The necessary governmental permits, there are none. This is not a storm drain system that we were trying to construct, and that is something that the defense is really trying to get across. There is a storm drain system. Part of it's in the village of Plainfield. Part of it goes across the IDOT right-of-way, and part of it goes into the WillowTree Farm. But what we were endeavoring to build, and what was our only right to build, was a pipe in the ground across a farm field. And the purpose of building that pipe at that point in time was because the only way to secure the permanent easement rights that Cambridge so badly wanted, that any developer who would develop this property so badly wanted, was to install the pipe. Once the pipe was installed, we had a perpetual easement to maintain, replace, and fix the pipe along that easement. So if anyone ever wanted to build a storm drain along that easement parcel to service that development and any surrounding development, they had to go through my client. That is what Cambridge and then WillowTree and these other parties endeavored to prevent us from doing so that they could get access. I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Mr. Campbell.
Morning, Your Honors, Counsel. I think it is, first, quite important to take a step back and look at the facts under which this case arose, because the context of how this case came to be sheds a great deal of light on the merits and motives of the plaintiff's case here. Number one, the only purpose for building this section of pipe, and this is a massive public improvement. This is a storm drain sewer. The pipe is 5 to 6 feet in diameter. The only purpose of that is to service this housing development. This is a 700-some-odd home housing development that was being built in Plainfield. There is no financial benefit to the developer for having to build these public improvements. It's a requirement of the village. If you're going to build houses and make money off of those houses, you're going to have to also build the public services to serve those. It was never, and one of the good pieces of evidence that Ocean Atlantic never considered this an asset is, I asked them directly, I asked their president, their chief financial officer, did you ever carry this easement or this pipe as an asset on any book or any record of the company? His answer was no. It's not an asset. It's a cost of the development. And what we have here is Ocean Atlantic, who 2 years prior, 3 years prior, had a contract to purchase the land on which these homes were going to be built. They lost that contract. They couldn't close. They wouldn't close. And they sued Arnhold and Bisantio in that case and said, even though we didn't close by the time that was specified after we put you off for years and years on the closing on the property, they sued them and said, we want you to perform anyway. And the district court below in the other case and this court said, no, you have lost all of your rights to that development parcel. You have no rights to it. You are not going to be building the homes. You are not going to be purchasing that land. And so when you look at the context, when you take a step back, you realize Ocean Atlantic had no reason to build this public improvement. They didn't have any rights in the development. You ask people like the village manager of Plainfield, and he was asked this, and you ask even Ocean Atlantic's principals, have you ever seen somebody build, and this isn't even a storm sewer, this is a portion of a storm sewer. Have you ever seen someone build just a pipe in a ground and hope that someday a development comes along and wants to use it? And the answer was no, never. It doesn't happen. It is a necessity. It is a requirement if you are going to build the houses. Ocean Atlantic had no reason to build this section of storm pipe. And one of the best examples of Ocean Atlantic's two-faced presentations, both before the district court and before this court, is on the one hand they say, well, you know, no permits were required. We didn't need any of that because we weren't building a storm sewer. We were just building a stretch of dormant pipe under some farm field. That's what they say when they're trying to rebut the argument that permits were needed. And we'll get to that. Permits were needed. That's obvious to everyone who's ever been involved in development, and I think it's obvious to everyone who has even a modicum of common sense. When they say, on the other hand, that the reason they've sued for millions of dollars here, that this stretch, this 1,500-foot stretch of pipe was worth millions of dollars, they say the reason it's worth millions of dollars is because it was part of this massive storm sewer system. Well, they can't have it both ways. They can't say, we didn't need to do all the things necessary for a storm sewer system. We didn't need to get a permit from the village. We didn't need to get a permit from IDOT. We didn't need to get a permit from Will County. And the evidence is before the court, undisputed. Undisputed. Will County testified, you have to have a construction permit in order to build this type of pipe. IDOT testified, you have to have a construction permit to build this type of pipe, and you have to have overweight permits to get the heavy equipment onto the site. The engineers, even for Ocean Atlantic, and this is another undisputed fact, said you cannot build this pipe, this stretch of dormant pipe on Willow Tree Farm without affecting the IDOT right-of-way, and therefore you needed that IDOT permit. You also needed a village permit. The village code, the subdivision ordinance, is very clear. The village has authority over the 1.5-mile planning zone around its border. So when they say, well, some of this was in the village and some of it was outside the village, it doesn't matter. The village has the authority. You know, Mr. Rowley, who is the president of Willow Tree, said in his deposition when they were questioning him, well, we didn't have to have a permit because you're not in incorporated Plainfield. He said, you know, I had to get a permit when I wanted to build a small addition on my garage. Do you think that you don't have to get any type of governmental permit when you're intending to build a 6-foot in diameter storm pipe? It is beyond reason. It is beyond reason.
What about, Ms. Campbell, the position that is the easement worth anything?
Is the easement worth anything?
I guess Ocean Atlantic's easement.
The answer to that is no, not worth anything that would give them any profit. And the reason is this. There were, you know, the other false premise, or one of the other false premises in Ocean Atlantic's argument, is that this was the one and only way for this storm sewer to be built, that it had to be on this particular stretch, that this, you know, 6 foot wide swath where their pipe was going to be implanted was the only route. Well, you have to remember, one, their engineer, again, this is undisputed, their engineer, our experts, our engineers, everyone agreed there were multiple routes. Their engineer said he came up with three or four different routes for the storm sewer. So there were multiple routes.
I'm thinking, assuming they lost development capacity or rights, but a subsequent developer obviously needs to use one of these routes. And can the argument be made that this easement and the investment in putting in the pipe might be then obviously sold to the subsequent successful developer who would welcome that installation being in place?
Yeah, I think the answer to that is that the economic value to them would be exactly what they had put into it and no more. So it's a break-even proposition at best, because the subsequent developer, in this case Cambridge Homes, who actually came in and built homes, could have bought an easement directly parallel to that. Willow Tree Farm testified, I was willing to sell a parallel easement, and there's no hindrance on them doing that. The easement agreement says this is non-exclusive. You can sell another easement across this same swatch of land if you want to. So the answer to that is, one, Cambridge or any subsequent developer might pay exactly what it would cost to do that, but no more. And so you don't have any profit incentive for Ocean Atlantic. They can't say, we want you to pay us $4.5 million, which is what they alleged in the original complaint. This is worth $4.5 million. Cambridge would say, well, you know what? I can build my own for $150,000 right next to it. So there is no economic value to this pipe. And then you get back to the issue of, it was impossible for Ocean Atlantic to build this. They didn't have any of the governmental permits that they needed. They didn't have any of...
Well, is that some insurmountable... are you suggesting they would be precluded from, at some point, obtaining those?
I'm suggesting that the easement only has value if they complete construction by June 30th of 2001, and they were not in a position to do that, and the law of contract is clear that you have to be in a position to perform and ready to perform if you're going to maintain an action for breach of contract. So the answer is to that is the June 30th date is the key.
The June 30th date was the extended date also? The
yes,
original
Judge.
Date was the end of the prior year?
The original date was December 31st of 2000.
And when were the plans submitted?
The plans, the unapproved plans, were given to Willow Tree in, I believe, early to mid-October.
2 months before the expiration of the original deadline.
2 months before the expiration. And you also have to remember, Ocean Atlantic, and this is in the record, Ocean Atlantic never had any intention of building any homes. At that time, when they had submitted those plans to Willow Tree, they had a contract with Cambridge Homes and with another developer. They were just going to flip this land. And that, again, is part of the factual background here. They were holding this land hostage from Arnhold and Bizantio. They had it under a sales contract, and this is the issue in the prior case. They were never going to build anything. They were going to flip the land. And that's why you see they did nothing on this easement for 2 years after they signed the easement agreement. They signed that in 1998. Did they get plans to the village at any point? No. Did they get plans to Will County? No. Did they get plans to IDOT? No. Never got any approvals. The only time they did anything, when they sent the plans to Will County, for instance, Ocean Atlantic specifically represented to them, this is for a storm sewer that will be owned and maintained by the village. That was their representation. And they represented it to Will County, and they represented it in writing on January 25th, 2001, to IDOT. They said, please, please, village, confirm to us that you're going to own and maintain this storm sewer after it is completed, because we need that information. We need that assurance to give to IDOT, or they won't let us build this. That was their statement. You know, and then when they make much ado about this, well, it was a condition precedent that Willow Tree approved the plans. This is really nonsense, and it's nonsense for any number of reasons. The plain language of the easement agreement says nothing about a mandatory sequencing of these obligations. It says you have to give us a $50,000 bond before you are entitled to come on the property or do any construction. the thing that gives, I think, greatest lie to their position about this sequencing, and that, you know, they're saying now, well, we determined we didn't have to get this bond because they hadn't approved the plans. In early June, a couple weeks after they first said, after having lost the property and now trying to figure out what other wrench they can throw in, after they first said, we want to come on the property, and Willow Tree's response immediately was, you have to give us the bond and you have to show us that the plans have been approved by the governmental authorities. Ocean Atlantic wrote back and said, approval of the plans by your client has been achieved. They said, we have your approval because you never said anything different. Now they're coming to you and saying, well, we knew all the time that we didn't have the approval and that's why we didn't get the bond. This is another case of two sides of the same coin being argued by these guys. And it is wrong. It is wrong, and it is against the law of contract and against the laws of common sense to accept what they have proposed here. This is nothing but another bitter swing at the people who are developing the land that they lost by virtue of the prior case. And it's going to go on and on and on until this court puts a stop to it.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Mr. Hughes.
Again, we were not constructing a storm drain system. We were constructing a storm pipe that may or may not at some point, as Your Honor seemed to catch on to, would convey storm water. The difference is critical because if you look at the record, Will County specifically told us you are not obligated to obtain a permit for the portion that's in Will County. Mr. Campbell talks about IDOT and the village. It's not in IDOT's jurisdiction. They had no jurisdiction over permitting a construction of pipe in Will County. The village of Plainfield specifically said, Howard Hamilton, their engineer, we weren't going to permit the portion that was in Will County. Will County had said no permit is required. As to whether or not this has value, everything that Mr. Campbell said is absurd with respect to that issue. Cambridge Homes endeavored to get this easement, not another easement, not an alternative. He says there's all kinds of alternatives. There are not all kinds of alternatives. This was the alternative. This is why George Seagraves, the representative of Cambridge Homes, the parent company, said, you can't purchase this property unless you have that particular easement. If we were allowed to do what we were contracted to do, which we paid to do, $150,000, we would have built the pipe and we would have been able to sell that easement for value, for significant value, according to our experts, to Cambridge Homes, because that is the easement that they needed to acquire the property and build the development.
Why couldn't they have gotten an alternative easement?
We didn't get into as much of that because that goes more to damages before the lower court, Your Honor. But if you look at, there were three alternative routes that were explored by Cambridge at the time. And each one of those alternative routes were significantly more expensive, significantly in the millions of dollars more expensive. And also each required separate private easements that hadn't been secured. So there could be no guarantee that those routes were even viable. And if they were viable, they would cost significantly more. This was the easement that made sense for any developer, and it would have been ours had they not breached their agreement. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Our thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to the second case of the